What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Good to join you as always, Ken. Frustrating loss to Pittsburgh this last weekend. Been a frustrating season from top to bottom, really. Ravens have clearly underachieved so far this year. They're 4-9 against the spread, which is the worst mark in the league. Fortunately, they still control their playoff destiny, and if they can flip that switch, the AFC seems wide open.
Yeah. I'm not optimistic about that happening, but I always am hopeful that they can turn around. I'll definitely be turning on the TV Sunday and excited about the possibility of them winning a football game. The consequences of them losing to Pittsburgh are absolutely gigantic. So that's
certainly hurts.
Of them losing the last game to Pittsburgh under the circumstances that they did, but the Cincy game too, before that even.
I thought you were looking forward. Yeah, some folks want to tank. I don't buy into that until you're mathematically eliminated. And then at that point, you want to rest some starters and see what some young players can do. Go for it. But I'm rooting for them hard.
Right. Well, me too. And the one player that is very significant that they probably will sit as soon as they're out of the playoffs, or maybe not. I don't know exactly how they'll do it, but I don't think they want to have the upgraded draft pick for Draymond Jones. And it doesn't really help the team to have him have a sack once they're eliminated. So it won't look good.
There'd be a few. Lamar, I think some of the young offensive linemen. Draymond's a two-pronged, as far as I recall. They would need to both make the playoffs and you'd have to have two sacks.
Oh, good point. So once they're out, then it doesn't matter. Okay, you're right.
Yeah, but let's hope that they're not going to be out. And let's pivot on to some what I think is really good news today.
Fantastic news today. So Travis Jones re-signed. It's one we've been talking about pretty much all season since last year, in fact.
Yep.
3 years, $40.5 million. Keeps him in Baltimore through the 2028 season. He was at the top of many other teams' DL wish list as a free agent this winter. What we did not know, until today anyway, it's a big secret, was that he had a service time snafu, perhaps similar to Bateman. I don't know the details. That was going to make him an RFA in 2026. And the Ravens could have just tendered him at the second round level and probably nobody would have signed him out from under them.
Yeah, $6 million, or they would have had the right to match too. So that was certainly beneficial to the Ravens. This was been the top re-signed target on my list going back to last year. I'm very thrilled by the signing. He's a three-down impact. The Ravens have made five extensions, to my knowledge. Eric DaCosta has this year. Derrick Henry, I was not in favor of because of the age and the positional value. Mark Andrews, I was not in favor of because of the declining metrics and the age. Bateman, it sort of seemed that there was a voluntary raise. But Kyle Hamilton, home run, grand slam. And as far as I'm concerned, Travis Jones, another three-run bomb.
Yep. I might go in the opposite direction because I was – even with the Hamilton, they had an extra year. They had the franchise tag. They had frictions to still get that done. The Hamilton's clearly the most valuable defensive player they have. I don't want to be in any way intimate that he's not. The signing of Travis Jones when he appeared to have one foot out the door is just like basically saving somebody off the top of the Empire State Building from falling off the edge. It's a remarkable kind of a kind of signing. He's played 61.5% of the snaps this year. He's played every significant snap for the Ravens in terms of the high leverage snaps. He's always in there on third down. If the dime package is on, he's a guy they've had. So they've used him for every time they need a good player out there. they've used him for those snaps. And he's got very high durability for a Ravens rotational defender. And the Ravens have certainly got value out of him.
Yes, 26 years old, has a history of playing through injuries the last 2 years now. PFF's 14th defensive lineman this year, 19th defensive lineman last year. He's being paid at the 27th highest rate. I want to make this comparison to Brandon Williams because he was the last nose tackle that the Ravens signed. 5 years, $53 million in 2017, 10.5 APY. On $167 million cap, that's 6.3% of the cap. Travis Jones, 3 years, 40.5, 13.5 APY, is
under five.
On a $296 million cap is 4.5. Mm-hmm. So, and in my view, Travis Jones is definitely the superior player. So,
I would agree, and he's already shown the versatility to play one and three. So, I think if the Ravens could go back to what they did this year, this is something I talked about when Michael Pierce was here that they should try the 1-3. With him and with Pearson Jones, and they finally did it this year out of necessity. What they did to the Steelers this last week, by the way, lost in an awful loss, and the officiating, all the crap coming out of that game, is the fact they activated four nose tackles for that game and completely shut down the Steelers' run game, which was the weapon they had. You know, coming into Baltimore was their missed tackle rates for their running backs and whatnot, and it was very effectively done. So I was happy with that. Makes Roquan look a hell of a lot better. A bunch of nose tackles in front of him. So
yeah, Roquan, I've been tough on Roquan this year. I think if you look at the roster and say who has played better this year than last year, there's only about five guys or so, and I would say Roquan is one of them. So yeah. I'll give him credit there.
Yeah, another guy who has played better in recent weeks, and now the Travis Jones signing – brings up the question of, can they still afford some people? One is likely, but the other is Linderbaum. And Linderbaum's pass blocking has quietly risen to number 12 on PFF's list out of 31 or 32, whatever the number of qualifying centers they have who played 50% of the snaps. But I will say this, we do count pressures differently, and I'm very protective of the cone. He has not been as good by my method as he has been by PFFs. So if you look at
a lot of C's in your articles, I've seen a lot of C's lately. Yep. I'll come back to it again. You don't want to pay a guy top of the market money when he's if he's an average pass blocking center, I still don't want to. He's got to be above average for that.
I'll buy that. And he probably is above average, honestly, right now. He's probably in about the 60th percentile by PFF grading. I'm at the point where I'd be okay with about $17 million right now. I don't know if he'd take it. It could be he goes to the market, he sees that there's not a great market for him, and he takes it. My guess is somebody pays him 20 or even 20.5, and the Ravens just have to throw up their arms and let him go at that point.
Yeah, 17 would be rich for me still. We'll get to some other ideas as we get into the mailbag later in the show. But why don't we pivot to the offensive line maneuvers that have happened this week while we're on the topic. Ravens signed Laken Tomlinson, long tenured vet, 6'3", 323, 33 years old. He played part of the season for Houston, sat on the street for a while, 55.4 pass block, 57.3 run block. So he's a worse pass protector, but a better run blocker than Falele this year.
He's basically very similar to player to both of the two guards they have currently. So if you're talking about really making an upgrade, that he ain't it. He was just signed to the practice squad. He wasn't signed to the roster, so he won't even play this week unless they elevate him, which seems possible, but probably a little bit unlikely. But he's closer to ready than other players. He had before this year, he had eight consecutive snaps of 1,000 plus, and he's been a good player in the past with San Francisco. You have to go back a few years. But he's a good player there, and he could be a player, I suppose, who would rekindle something. The pass rusher, the offensive lineman the Ravens found at mid-career who reverted to having his best years with the Ravens is Morgan Moses in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
So it could happen with a Tomlinson again. He could find the fountain of youth, have two good years here, and we'd be very excited for a development like that.
Yep. Corresponding move was to release Carl Lawson, who received one elevation against his former squad, the Bengals. Didn't seem like a perfect scheme fit. He's more of a 4-3 front kind of guy, I think. It is a little bit curious that the Ravens now have three offensive guards on the practice squad, including a former first-round pick, Kenyon Green, and your friend Penny.
Yeah, he's still there. The other thing, I mean, they're effectively, they're holding on to him for kind of a futures deal. Nobody else is going to take Jerod Penning away from the Ravens at this point. They'll have him for the 90 next year in camp, and they probably see something they like, and okay, fine. With regard to Lawson, I think I'm more surprised that they don't really have any kind of a replacement as the fourth outside linebacker. They didn't use one of their two elevations. They used one of Sanusi Kane this last week, and they end up playing David Ajabo for, I think, 8 snaps of early down defense. And David Ajabo did make one play, but it does not seem like that's a winning usage. But also Lawson is one of many situational pass rushers the Ravens have at the position. So it's not like he brings something different than a lot of these other players.
Agreed. So Tavius Robinson may be on track to get back and suit up this week. We'll get to the injury report after we run through a little bit more of this transactional news. Ben Cleveland suspended 3 games. So he's not eligible to come back until the season finale, and he wasn't playing anyway. Any thoughts there?
Probably he's played his last game as a Raven, but let's calibrate this for a second, because I believe this is still the punishment for what happened this last off season and not something new that occurred. So there wasn't a second event of some sort.
I've heard conflicting. I saw Tony Lombardi said that it was a banned substance, but then I saw the Baltimore Banner reporter said that it was directly because of the DUI. So either way, just as we look back on it now, what a questionable re-sign. It just, if you were never going to give him a chance and he's just essentially, you knew a suspension was forthcoming, why didn't they go and try to get a better veteran potentially?
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll try and answer this because I know that's kind of rhetorical, but I'll kind of answer this. First of all, it was cheap as hell. And so they got somebody at the vet minimum in a year where they wanted to get somebody at the vet minimum, the guard spot. The second thing is, they didn't give him a chance, but they also weren't ever forced to give him a chance by injury. So it wasn't a case where Falele or Voorhees were out. They just don't trust Ben Cleveland to play the position any better than either of those guys. And that might be realistic. The fact that Ben Cleveland did play better 3 and 4 years ago, I think now is what we're talking about now in his first and second years. I mean, it's, I don't know that that's pertinent anymore. I grew up, I didn't grow up, but I was in my 20s when Joe Enicro was getting ancient, as you know, he was still pitching for the Braves and a knuckleballer. And it's age never really seemed to be relevant at the time. Nolan Ryan, another pitcher that, you know, his age didn't seem to be relevant. So I don't think it matters what he did 3 or 4 years ago at this point, any more than I think it matters what Lakin Tomlinson did 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's a fair point for sure. In other offensive line related news, Cordell Woodland asked John Harbaugh his plans for continuing the rotation with Emory Jones. And Harbaugh intimated that that is not in the plans for this coming week. Emory did not log a snap the last week. It is a little bit frustrating. I don't think Daniel Falele has earned every single rep this entire season. His play has been declining the last couple of weeks. I saw he got a D your recent report. They're extremely loyal to him right now, and it's a little bit puzzling.
No, his play has definitely declined. And, I was very optimistic coming into the season about what Daniel Falele might be. And unfortunately, that really hasn't turned out. What's been interesting about Falele is he hasn't had a single game, not one game, where he's fallen into the F range. And I can call a fall off the table game something below that, where a guy falls below like a 50 at tackle and he's 10 points short of passing or whatever. He hasn't come close to a game like that. So there's still a lot of hyperbole surrounding him. But that said, I mean, the Ravens are not going to bring back Daniel Faalele next year. There's too much.
And if
I were Daniel Faalele, I would want out of Baltimore. So I would want to get away, frankly, from a toxic environment with the fans in terms of what's going on. They do seem to love him. I mean, the management here seems to be behind him. And you might have a new offensive line coach. The new offensive line coach might not like him. If that were to happen, then he's got to reprove himself. What's happened is very frustrating. I feel very differently about Voorhees. I feel like he's done enough that you got to look at the amount of runway he has left, which is 2 years left, and still keep giving him chances. But they're basically the same player at this point. They're basically the same player in terms of being frustrating underperformers for the season.
But one guy has 2 years of team control left. The other guy doesn't.
And it's
I don't know how fair it is to Emory Jones to say, okay, you can play 15 snaps or whatever against the Bengals 2 weeks ago, but you didn't show us enough in your first action ever. You didn't even play in the preseason. And you're also switching sides from the right to the left. And now you still don't get an opportunity. You'd like to maybe see what you have in Emory Jones, but I guess, it is what it is at this point.
I'd like to. I mean, I'm frustrated by the fact that apparently the Ravens and Emory Jones, or maybe Emory Jones himself, or maybe the Ravens felt the need was too great that they could shut him down for the whole year. Whoever made the decision, in concert or individually, unilaterally, in either way, that he should be playing this year, it now appears to have been a big mistake. Big mistake. And they should have NFI'd him and then we'd have 4 years still.
I just, at the end of the day, I don't think Daniel Faalele has earned, his play has earned a cemented in stone every single snap.
Sure.
Considering his contract expiration and the way he's played. Little stubborn.
I'm with you, boss. Let's spend another second on this.
Yeah.
I'm with you in terms of that. No doubt about it.
Absolutely.
The question is, has Emory Jones, earned a rotational portion? I'd say he hasn't. And the limitation on this year, he's only going to give that much value to the Ravens anyway. That's a short area between my two fingers that I'm showing to Voss here. We're trying to, pretend like that thing is gold or something. And it wasn't. It's whatever Emory Jones can give you as a first-year lineman, which isn't going to be much. So you have to really value the fail-forward value of what he does rather than the actual contribution he's going to make to the 2025 Ravens.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the injury report.
We didn't talk about Carl Jones signed at 53.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
So Carl Jones signed to the 53 from he's a special teams linebacker. I had the he hasn't played a snap on defense in either of his 2 years, but he played 148 snaps for the Chicago Bears and was released, and the Ravens snapped him up in need of another big.
Right. And that makes sense. They seem to be really short on bigs at the inside linebacker position. On special teams. They used four guys last week. They used one tight end, Kolar, and three inside linebackers. And it's hard to see who the next guy is. It probably would be the next guy up on the inside. I don't think they really want to use him there, which means they do need another big. And that is where you often fall short. You don't have a lot of guys who can really run and are bigs to cover kicks. And if you're wondering, why wouldn't you just put an offensive lineman there? Well, you can't cover a kick with an offensive lineman. So you wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You definitely can't do an offensive lineman. I think they're a little bit too protective of some of the second or first or even second on the depth chart. You see DK Metcalf playing special teams last week. It's a little bit new. The last 2-3 years, they used to be they carved out one or two or maybe three spots for special teams only, and now it seems to be a little bit more. The last, especially this year, I mean, they've had essentially two special teams only inside backers on the field on the game day roster every single week, and then Trent Simpson on top of that's only getting 2 to 5 snaps on top of it. It's a little, and then the whole Ali Keaton Mitchell thing, but it's it's the way they're doing it this year, so it is what it is.
All right.
Injury report?
Yeah, sure, injury report.
Okay, so full practice after resting on Wednesday was Lamar Jackson on Thursday. Keith Mitchell, another full practice after what looked like a multi-week knee injury. Tavius Robinson and Ardarius Washington, both full on Thursday today. Nate Wiggins was full with the foot, and Chidobe Awuzie was full with the shoulder that he caused him out on Wednesday, and the limiteds were Bateman and Andrews. I think there's a pretty good chance we see Robinson return, and I think Washington's season debut this week.
Yeah, that would be terrific. That would be absolutely terrific. And obviously, Robinson, critically important, but there's your extra special teams big, too, if you need him. The reason they might not use Robinson in that role is just because he's too important to the defense. You mentioned DJ Metcalf, but I'm not in the same spot on that. I guess they need those early down snaps so much at that outside linebacker position. I'd make the special team sacrifice and keep him off that unit. But great report for the Ravens across the board.
Yeah. I mean, they get Washington and Robinson back, and really Matabike is only one of the initial 53 that's hurt, which is pretty good in December for sure.
We are very close to Waterloo here for this game. I mean, this is not quite the end of the line here. The Ravens still have some ways to get in if they lose to the Bengals, but they're going to need the Steelers either to lose all the remaining games after this week or other than the Browns, or to lose to the Browns and then lose to the Ravens. And that is a very tough road to hoe.
You lose three games in the division, three must-win games in the division when you're favored in all three of them, you don't deserve to be in the playoffs.
Well,
they got to get it done.
They don't deserve to be in the playoffs this year. They already don't deserve to be in the playoffs this year.
Yeah,
even if they come back and they win their last four, I mean, they play like crap, frankly. And, they
got to win this one, though. Yeah. This one is really, I mean, it's, you say, back against the wall, but they still have 20-30% chance. If they lose this one, I think they're down to the teens.
It'd be lower than that because if they lose the divisional record tiebreaker to the Steelers if they lose this game. So that's the big deal. They have the big hope is that they beat the Steelers, tie up the head to head tiebreaker, tie up the division tiebreaker, and they have the common opponents tiebreaker sealed.
Right.
So
the common opponents is after division, right?
That's correct.
That's
head to head division, common opponents, and that's why they got to win this divisional game.
Yep. Got it. Yep, that's what I thought.
All right. So we had some additional flexing of games, which is a big batch of suck as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I grow to hate night football more every year, but I really don't like night football in cold weather. It exacerbates a bad situation and makes it more cold. The New England game, I mean, they're already playing now. Four games the rest of the way. They're against cold weather teams that are almost certainly all going to be quite cold weather games. Where they play at night at home and then three on the road, and it's right. New England, Green Bay, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh, four teams that know how to play in cold weather.
Ice sharpens ice, I guess. They're going to have to learn to win in the cold if they're going to make a run in the playoffs. So from that perspective, but as far as a fan viewership perspective, I agree with you. The older I get, the less I like night games. I will say, for the conspiracy theorists out there that think that the NFL is fixed and the Steelers, the league wanted the Steelers to win last week, you have to figure that the league wants the Ravens to win this week so that these primetime games are a little bit more exciting.
Oh, we got that. And then they certainly want a meaningful game in week 18 as an option. But this is what we're looking forward at. New England and Green Bay have already been flexed, but that Pitt game is going to be flexed too if it's the Week 18 game. There's no doubt about it in my mind because they always try and pick one that involves the division to be won or lost with no wild card ramifications. And that's exactly what that game would have if the Ravens and Steelers are playing for the title.
Yep. So, listen. We've seen crazier things happen. I think the Ravens could win the next six games in a row potentially. So we'll see we'll have our popcorn ready and hope for the best.
Yeah. And you know what? If that happened, they might play the AFC Championship game at home at the end of that six. All right. Okay. Let's move on to the running back situation. Obviously, the Mitchell injury was really bothersome originally. Now it seems to be less of a deal. With two remaining running backs, how serious? I mean, we're looking at having Jonathan Ward activated, I guess, for as a third running back.
I think they could get away with two for a game. I mean, Henry's known as a workhorse, and one off the box idea I had when I first was reviewing this, preparing for the show, is what about Derrick Henry returning kicks? He would have a built-in runway. He might be able to really do some damage. Maybe not this week, but you get into the playoffs and he can return a kick with a 10 yards to gain a head of steam. That might work.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about at some point the way Ed Reed used to return punts, Ed Reed was really a designated fair catcher. Yeah. Who did return a punt for a touchdown, of course, for Cincinnati. But my problem with Henry is that you really, really have a higher injury risk with a player who hasn't played special teams in a long time.
True.
And I'm sure he has at some point in his life, but it's certainly been a long time.
Probably at Alabama, freshman year Alabama.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Okay. So the other thing, you know, they didn't have an RB3 carry. Do you know when their first RB, you probably see, cause you can see it in the notes, but when they had their first RB3 carry last year,
it was Keaton Mitchell, right? Was it Ali? Was Ali on the roster and he didn't have a touch maybe until the very end of the season.
Yes,
and then once Mitchell was finally healthy enough, he got a touch late in the season.
Yeah, it's a week 15. So they had Mitchell get two snaps played and he got one carry that was caught, was overturned by penalty in week 10 or 11. And then they didn't have another RB3 carry until week 15. So it was all Hill and Ali. Hill and Henry last year, and I guess they could get by with Henry and Ali. You know, they clearly have their defined roles by now. By the way, 14 set and chip snaps combined for Ali this last week. It wasn't a great performance by PFF score, but it was nice to see. I mean, they're completely committed to using him in that role.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tell, I think, but it's already a known when it's third and nine, you're not going to be running at Derrick Henry. He wasn't great this week in pass pro, but we'll see how it unfolds. I still think he'd be a fine replacement for Justice Hill and harvest that $3.5 million.
For next year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I guess in a sense they knew what they were doing. They're lucky they stayed with him in terms of the roster, because we certainly had him cut a number of times. And he might have lasted on the practice squad. You know,
I think
a few running backs were taken. Yeah.
Right.
All right. So the defensive line this week is an interesting choice. I know people have been calling for Peebles to get an activation for a long time. It does appear to me it will happen this week. They could elevate Tupou again. It just doesn't seem likely to me that they will do it, given potential other needs for elevations.
Yeah, you made note of the four nose tackles and the completely shutting down Pittsburgh's run game last week. I want to know if you think that was necessarily a good strategy, because the pass rush suffered, I think. It might have been just too much, too many big body run stuffers, not enough pass rushers.
Okay, so my feeling would be it didn't suffer on the downs that or the nose tackles were not the problem, with it suffering on the downs where the pass rush was really pertinent. So they, first of all, take the very first play of the game. It was a first down play, sure, and it also was a pressure. They got a great pressure from Van Noy making a move in, and he just dropped the ball in the bucket. When you come to the critical snaps where they were playing dime, or they had. Really, it was dime. Those are all the third down snaps, basically, all the things from third and three up. And Travis Jones was the only defensive lineman on the field. He'd be on the field no matter what.
Sure. Well, I do hope that you can get a look at Peebles at some point this year. I mean, he's really logged, I don't know, less than 50 snaps, I think, this season.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober. Or get pulled over, paid for by NHTSA.
Yeah. And the other player I'd look to would be Tez Walker. You know, you want to have some development. You don't want to have him riding the pine because Tylan Wallace is maybe slightly better at special teams. I think he's significantly better on offense and comparable in special teams, maybe not quite as heady. But I did see, I think last time Walker was active, he did get pancaked on one special teams play, so maybe that's why he was deactivated.
Well, I mean, on offense, Walker, he was 0-for-2 in targets against Cincinnati. He looked terrific on both of them. I mean, he was way down the field. Geno Stone fell down, but he got behind the defense twice. The first time he got behind, and Lamar whistled the ball over his head. Maybe under some remarkable circumstance, he could have caught that ball leaping, but it really was just – it was a bad throw. And the other one, he got behind the defense, and Dax Hill was trailing and huffing and puffing, and Lamar underthrew the ball by about 5 or 6 yards, and there was an opportunity for him to have just a walk-in six, and instead it ends up being a play that we think about now when we pair up with the Rodgers non-interception as being if that was not a catch, then the Walker had to have a catch there.
I agree. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see. Sanusi Kane was elevated last week. He's now on the practice squad. Will Ardarius Washington take that spot potentially? And TJ Tampa's doing pretty well on special teams. Mm-hmm. So and also could factor in potentially a little bit on defense too.
Yeah, it'd be fine to see TJ Tampa play on defense. I mean, I wouldn't want it to happen out of necessity. I'd like to have it happen out of just, hey, let's see if he can play rotationally at the end of a game we're leading by 3 scores. I love that. And Emory Jones, I'm sure, will be active, obviously, this week over period. Vinson, active over Noteboom again this last week, was a good one. So that's a good one. I want to see that again.
Yeah, last week I opined that maybe they wanted to have one veteran as the backup offensive lineman, and because they hadn't had any of the three young guys, and they went with three young guys last week, so that was good development. I'd like to see those guys play. Bullock got a little bit of run. So, if the season does go the wrong way for the Ravens, the silver lining is we maybe get to see what some of the young guys can do for next year.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody really likes that. I mean, nobody attends September baseball when you're just looking at the call-ups, even when there were a lot of them, way back before the current rules, people just didn't like it. We have a deep mailbag today,
very deep
mailbag, and we're going to get to what we can, and I apologize in advance if we don't get to your question, but we're going to get to a bunch of these. So I'll start. The first one is Barrick Bibasta says, do you think it's ultimately the right call by EDC not to do more at the trade deadline? A guard like Zeitler and a decent interior lineman or another pass rusher could have rounded out the team to be a contender in a wide open AFC. The draft capital we gave up for Jones and the lost comp pick from Owe are basically wasted if we miss the playoffs and don't have a high draft pick because our record is okay.
Loaded question there. I have a hard time saying you should have traded for a guy that wasn't traded. You can only look at the players that were traded and say, could the Ravens have pulled the trigger on that specific move? I'm on record for saying they should have picked up Jalen Phillips, who was traded to the Eagles for a third. He has one sack, two pass defense, three tackles for loss, and five quarterback hits. The other second half of that question, the OA trade's not necessarily aging well. OA has five sacks, five TFLs, obviously, and nine quarterback hits for the Chargers, while Louis Gilman, decent run defender, he's not necessarily a plus coverage player.
It's nine other quarterback hits or nine including
nine
the
total,
five sacks?
Yeah, including the five. So four. Yeah, yep.
Sometimes people get them from PFF and they do the other method, but if you get them from PFR, then they'll PFR.
I use PFR for.
Okay. All right. I'm with you on that. And I don't think it's for lack of trying that they didn't pick up a guard. I think they would have been happy to pick up a veteran guard. And, they've got Laken Tomlinson now. I think they would have been happy to find somebody else. Kevin Zeitler is a reasonable name. I think whatever Tennessee was asking for him was more than what the Ravens were willing to pay. So if they thought, hey, Kevin Zeitler's worth a sixth and they wanted a fifth for Zeitler, then that might have been, a point that cut them off. And it basically, look, you could point to any number of trades they might have made this season, but I sure as hell am happy they didn't make the trade to get Micah Parsons, for example, because that wouldn't have changed the Ravens into being a contender, not for the Super Bowl. It might have changed their chance to get to the playoffs, but I just don't believe it would have really increased their chance to win the Super Bowl by any significant amount. By any significant amount. I'll leave it at that. And it had an enormous cost. It would have had an enormous cost on the franchise that would have rippled through multiple years. So
I was against the Parsons trade because not only did you have to give up the draft picks, but you had to give up the contract.
Contract, sure.
But I've a lot of people in some of the group chats and stuff have been pounding the table for that. And I've started to listen to that a little bit more. And that dovetails pretty nicely into our next mailbag comment from Hugh Cole, a little bit long-winded, so I'll pose it to you, Ken. I think that Ken's narrative that if the Ravens were to take on future risk by expending salary cap / draft capital to win now means that they could turn out like the Eagles or the Browns is incomplete. It ignores the quality decision-making that the Ravens have shown over decades. Teams don't become the Browns overnight. It takes years of poor decisions after poor decisions. The Ravens front office has shown an ability to be thoughtful and solid in all phases. Voss has used the Eagles and Rams as examples. I would add the Patriots and Broncos. Both are historically great franchises that have won Super Bowls since the Ravens, and both took big organizational risks in recent years, suffered in the standings, and are now back competing for number one seeds. I am confident that if the Ravens took some risks to raise their ceiling during the Lamar era, that they would benefit from the raised floor that they had developed by being a solid organization to bounce back quickly if it doesn't work.
Okay, so there are parts of that I agree with. So first of all, if you're saying you don't want to take the screwdriver out of the toolkit because you don't trust your GM to use the screwdriver properly, then I agree with that. But you've got to also add to that that you got to trust the GM to use the screwdriver when the screwdriver is really necessary. Okay. And you're going to talk about less risk of this. I'm in favor of the Ravens organizational philosophy, which is one of level play where every season we have something to look forward to. We're never like facing a down year. I was able to take it in 2002 because the team had been so good and they'd won a Super Bowl in 2000. But if they hadn't, I'd have been miserable through that. Sure. I'd have been miserable through it. I'm having a hard time like accepting the notion that we do that. But the point you make is the best way I've ever heard it said. So we appreciate you making your contribution, you don't take a tool away when the organization has proved that they're exceptional at using all their other tools. So it's a very valid point. And I think if you look at where teams like trade multiple draft picks and then have to sign somebody to a big contract, I think that's generally something that losing teams have done in the past. There have been exceptions, and the Packers honestly seem to be one team that has gotten away with it a couple times. The first time was Reggie White, and the second time they may get it away with is Parsons. Of course, if they don't make a run at it this year, the Parsons move is going to look pretty bad.
Love's already paid. All right, so I'll try to be concise because we've talked about this general topic before. I'll just make a couple points. I agree with Cole that the Ravens' institutional advantages raise the floor. I think even if they were to pursue a more aggressive, they would still, their prowess in UDFAs, for example, raises the floor. I think the big difference between now and maybe a decade ago is the Eagles and the Rams in particular have proven that teams can go hyper aggressive, and the spool back time until they're back into the mix is quick. It's a year. It's not 1 year all in, 3 years rebuild. It's 3 years all in, 1 year rebuild, so to speak, if you do it the right way, if you do it the smart way. And the Ravens have been trying this contend every season method for 13 years. They've only made one conference championship game. So I think they should take a look at the, what gives them a better chance, a better percentage chance to win the Super Bowl. So all in all, I would say I would like to see them be a little bit more aggressive with draft picks, trading up in the draft. Hypothetically, they're one of the only teams. I think they probably value draft picks more than any other franchise. And I would like to see them maybe trade up in the draft or be willing to maybe trade for a player that's already under contract so you don't have to hit that double dip. So if it was up to me, I would adjust the levers. I wouldn't go all crazy like the Rams or the Eagles, but maybe 10% on the DJ mixer. And move that around just a little bit, because if the league changes, you got to change with it. It's all.
Well, two things about that. The first is, if the CBA basically gets redone and the Eagles somehow get forgiven, and the Browns for that matter would probably be in the same spot, get forgiven all the debt they've mounted up, then the Ravens will have lost an opportunity. Nobody, I don't think anybody believes that's going to happen. Okay, I think they'd have to get 24 out of 32 to agree with it, which means that the owners wouldn't agree to it. Now, what might happen is the players might force the issue and say, hey, look, you've got all these non-competitive teams salary-wise, the Browns and the Eagles, those poor teams can't even compete with salary for us. It's hurting us. Look, wipe out their salary cap debt. And we have a deal on these other issues. That's how it might happen. And
that would piss me off.
It would be pissed off beyond belief. Yeah.
Same here. Same here for sure.
But you can see a lot of the teams on the fence might say, all right, you know, we're not giving you free agency after 3 years or something else that's ridiculous, you know, to do this. But we will give you that as the only thing we're giving. And in addition to this, we want an 18th game and we want this and we want that. They might agree to something like that.
Why don't they just give them a higher percentage of revenues? I don't see how isolating certain teams' debt is fair in any respect at all.
It's not. But they had an uncapped year in 2011, I think, right? So they did it once. The other thing
didn't
about
they claw which, back, didn't they claw back some of that, though? I thought they clawed back some of that. Somebody went wild with it, and then they had to pay the piper later, if I recall.
Oh, okay.
Well, it might have been Cleveland, even.
I need to look at that again, but I did not remember that. That's interesting. I know that after.
No, I think it was Washington. It was Dan Snyder. I think he got hit with a penalty for taking advantage of that unkept year, if I remember.
Okay. I know after COVID, they've had clawbacks, which is part of the reason why, you know, salaries were depressed for a little bit, and then it took a while for it to jump back up. And now the NFL's, you know, all healthy again and making tons of money. So it's not an issue. The other thing I'll say is if you're looking at the whole span of the NFL, the Ravens are doing the right thing. They want to be in the middle in terms of void year spending. They want to be above average every year in terms of cash spending. And that's a stated goal of the Ravens, is they want to basically ride the curve. You can think of it as surfing on top of the salary cap. Is they're squeezing a little bit out of future years so that they don't hit a low point in the future. But they want to take advantage. They really do want to take advantage of the fact that the dollars that they have to pay back in a future year are worth less than the dollars that they spend now. They could get more player value out of that. So they understand that. And, you know, I think you've made a good point here, and I don't want to minimize it in any way. I don't think it begs for an extreme solution, but that said, if they wanted to go a little heavier on void years to be in the middle of the pack, I wouldn't have a problem with that. And then that puts them, you know, in the spot.
I think that's a very fair point, Ken. I think we should, when I first started arguing this topic to be more aggressive back in 2018 or something, when I first started writing for Baltimore Beatdown, the Ravens were extremely conservative. They're not as conservative now. They have utilized void years. They have taken some risk in the draft on character players like Mike Green. And I think we should give them credit for that. That's Sashi Brown and Eric DaCosta modernizing the formula a little bit. So I'll leave it there.
And still Ozzie modernizing the formula, because he's in there. All right, here's another one. This is from prof_Boggs. Ken, on 12/10/2012, the Ravens fired offensive coordinator Cam Cameron. After seeing the offense's barbell results, Lamar's frustration at Fa'alele, and he's pointing to the quote, "It's like they know what's coming," and Henry's predictable usage, could making a similar move this season make sense? I've got an answer, but I'll let you take this one first.
Yeah. For me, the main critiques on offense from coaching perspective are predictability and personnel. I think they're using too much heavy packages, and I did a little bit of number crunching on this. They're 18th in EPA with 11th personnel on the field, 29th with 12 personnel, which is a reversal from previous seasons. Mm-hmm. And they're 17% more with 12 compared to the league, and 24% less with 11 compared to the league. They're better with 11, both running and passing from an efficiency standpoint. Harbaugh said he wanted to get Hopkins more involved. Todd Monken reiterated that today. So use more 11. Well, I thought it was crazy on the last drive that they had 12 personnel on the field on Kolar's play, and then they subbed out Ricard for a set block while the clock was ticking to continue the 12. That was just mismanagement. I do have a follow-up, but I'll let you respond to that first.
So I'm not in disagreement, but the main problem with the Ravens offense this year, and the reason why they'd make a sub like Ricard in the final minute there, was basically because Lamar's mobility is not what it was. So the Ravens offense is suffering with Lamar's injury. It's not Lamar's fault. I want to make that clear. I still think Lamar is the best player in the league when healthy. So that's not the problem. It's nothing about the future or the current that I want to change from betting on Lamar Jackson. I want this franchise to basically ride to the end with Lamar Jackson here as long as it will go. But right now, it's Lamar's injury is hurting the Ravens offense more than any single person, way more than the offensive line put together, in terms of how it changes the way the Ravens use misdirection. And every other team, when they know it, they can crowd the line of scrimmage and they can make Lamar feel uncomfortable. All of those things make using the read option more difficult. And, you know, that's what drives the Ravens offense and their ability to basically manipulate linebackers out of position, which is the fuel of the Ravens offense. So we can talk about all of the things that are wrong. All of the things are B and C level things compared to the 1A+ level thing that is Lamar Jackson is the is injury the big problem with the Ravens this year.
You would hope that a top echelon offensive coordinator would be able to say Lamar's injured. We cannot lean on this read option advantage that we have so much and devise some other ways. But all that said, I don't think promoting T. Martin hypothetically would be the solution. Mm-hmm. I do think you're going to ride it out with Monken this year. However, I just because you Prof Boggs opened the door, I think they could look at making a change on the defensive side in season, and I think it might pay dividends. The Pagano would be a natural fit. Some believe Orr turned the defense around after the bad start. Here are the current ranks: 30th in sacks, 24th in takeaways, 22nd in points allowed, 25th in yards allowed, 26th in passing yards allowed. The one metric they're doing pretty well in is rushing yards are 15th allowed. But I'd rather see a guy like Pagano that's prioritizing creating havoc on defense, creating turnovers and creating variance that's going to stop teams than focusing on stopping the run and playing soft coverages.
Why not get Wink Martindale back? Definitely a guy who's a exceptional yeah. havoc creator, if you want to do that.
Well, he might be taking over in Michigan, right, with the news this week. He was the DC in Michigan, isn't he?
Oh, I actually didn't know that. Okay, that's
sure. I saw him on the sideline a couple weeks ago.
All right. Well, Wink, you know, maybe with that connection, maybe Wink would be a guy that would come back. I'm honestly not as down on Orr as other people are. I think one of the things that I've liked is how much variation Orr has tried with variation of scheme in order to make this defense right, with all of the multitude of problems it's had, starting with Matapike's injury, but all of the problems they've had, injuries at other positions, Roquan, the outside linebackers, missing time from Hamilton, missing time from Humphrey. Humphrey's not right now. I mean, he's allowed 9.3 yards per target. He's not as good as he used to be, but he ain't that bad.
Nah, that was a push-off. That was a push-off on Metcalf, I thought. I thought he played – he rebounded last week, actually.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm not talking about the Pittsburgh game. I'm saying okay. His season this year has not been good. He's allowed 9.3 yards per target.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying I don't think he's that bad. I think he honestly has been playing hurt a lot. I think it's been a lot of this has been the groin and some things that would slow him down. We didn't talk about this, but the potential move of Humphrey to safety is something I definitely want to see coming up soon.
I agree. I think he would be you keep him on the roster, you eat the $7 million, you don't re-sign Gilman, and potentially not Washington either, and Martin is your backup nickel, or he's your nickel when Hamilton's dime, and Marlowe's on the back end, and now you have potential to start creating takeaways, because they're just not enough sacks, not enough takeaways. I don't think there's any way to really spin that another way. Just to put a button on it, we're not going to get into Harbaugh again. We talked to last week, but I do think there's a high likelihood that one, if not both, coordinators are replaced after the season, even if Harbaugh is retained. And I believe Jeff Zarebeck had reported something similar this week.
I didn't see. I'll have to look for that. But I don't doubt that both will be at risk. But I don't doubt that. I wouldn't be surprised if one were replaced.
Yeah. So all right, move on to Kid Rock 20. Short and sweet, propose a plan to fix the pass rush.
That's its own episode. I don't feel like we could do this all in this period of time, but if you want to start with the basic building blocks, I think they'll use at least one draft pick on a pass rusher. I think they'll use another draft pick on a three tech. And there are your most important building blocks. I think they'll go again to the open market and find an older pass rusher to replace a player like Van Noy, because they've had success with that. That's three changes right there to do it. Travis Jones is an enormous signing with regard to maintaining what they've had as a pass rush in 23 and 24 and trying to get back to that. There's multiple pieces there, but if you really want to talk all the things they could do in terms of the pass rush, there's a bunch of other schematic things they could try. You know, if I'll start with one quick one I'll toss out there. If Humphrey were a safety, Humphrey's a good pass rusher. He could be used in that role a lot as a safety, which would be kind of cool and seeing him be used in a different way.
Imagine the interchangeability between Hamilton and Humphrey.
Oh,
if Humphrey's lined up as safety, he could play dime and he could blitz, and they could get all kind of, I mean, you know, and you need a guy with the to make that work. So I'll give my quick answer to Kid Rock. I think this offseason the Ravens need to find an apex pass rusher. They traded away Owe, who I think coming into this season we hoped would take that step. At least I did. Getting to ball out quick quarterbacks is a problem that scheme cannot necessarily fix. You need guys that can win one-on-one quick. On the bright side, Trey Hendrickson, Joey Bosa, Jalen Phillips, Josh Uche, Jadeveon Clowney, and Odafe Owe himself are all pending UFAs who are all in PFF's top 25 from pass rush grade. So you can hypothetically lean into that depth and find the next Clowney or whoever it was years ago. The next Van Noy, whoever it is, it's going to give you a little bit more juice as a one-on-one pass rusher.
Okay. All right. First of all, I want Mike Green to develop into their best pass rusher next year. I think that would be the ideal situation if he was done that. I think the easiest way for him to do that is to get off the field for some snaps here and not be playing as much. But there's so many components to that. It's probably literally an hour long show to go through how could you improve the Ravens pass rush. And I could probably come up with 15 ways that you could make, small improvements in it. Mm-hmm. And some of them would be larger than others, like making draft picks and possibly going out and making another big signing, not just a elderly signing.
Agreed. You had another one from Reddit?
Extra pretzel, please, from Reddit. Do the Ravens have a good chance to sign Likely? Could they move forward with Andrews, Likely, Bateman, and Zay? I know he'll be expensive, but clearly the best wide receiver the Ravens have had in years.
I think we touched on this last week. I think Zay gets the fifth-year option. I don't think he gets a long-term deal over $30 million per season. As I noted earlier, I want to see the Ravens move to more 11 and not so much 12, so I don't want to pay two tight ends. I do think maintaining a strong third wide receiver, especially if you're playing more 11, whether that be DeAndre Hopkins or a day two draft pick at receiver, would be a priority.
Yeah, I still have hope that Walker will develop into a deep threat that will give the Ravens more than he has so far. But he's been good on a per target basis. There's just no targets there so far in two seasons, and I don't want him to turn into a pure special teams player. That'd be an immense waste of potential talent here.
Absolutely,
he's got to be. They've got to find how to get him on the field and get him used. But I think the Ravens in recent years have kind of decided between the draft picks of Marquise Brown, Bateman, and Zay Flowers, that they can more efficiently through the draft find these wide receivers than pay them. And if the salaries are going to go up from here, and we're talking about $45 million this next year to sign a DK Metcalf type wide receiver, I mean, they're never going to sign a fourth year wide receiver entering free agency, a contract like that, or your fifth year, I should say, entering free agency.
Yeah, I agree. So that's been my theory, is a way to moneyball the receiver position. You take a top 90 wide receiver three out of every 4 years, and you always have three in the roster that way. And even if one doesn't hit, then you bring in a veteran, or you get, with Lamar, his reputation, you can sign a guy like DeAndre Hopkins for a relative good value. So that's the way I would approach the receiver position.
Top 90, meaning top 90 draft picks. You probably mean first, second, or third round.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So. Once you get to the fourth round, they're kind of pick through. That's what I've seen, trend wise.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that you never find value there, but you are. It is a risk, and Tez Walker's a fourth round pick, and they're hoping.
Yeah, he checks the boxes more that the Devin Duvernay type is kind of the guy that's borderline. Gotcha. That's not quite a guy that you want as your starting receiver in 11.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. I'm sorry. We're out of time here, so we're gonna have to green room some questions here. And I do appreciate all the effort people have gone to. Want to also ask people, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag whenever you can. If we don't get them on Friday morning GM, I might do a 1 to 3 minute video on them. So we've had questions come up with that, and it's been very useful for those kind of that kind of content. So I've greatly appreciated it. And I don't think we're ever, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, Voss, but I don't think we're shortcutting this show to talk about some of those things in advance, because we always have much more to say.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, appreciate the comment from, or the question from Garnet. Great comment. Basically, he wants a full offseason plan, and I have some thoughts. I'm sure you do, and we have plenty of time. We got a long offseason ahead of us to get to all those thoughts.
Yeah, No, and plan would be to continue the show at least on a semi-weekly basis or another every other week basis during the off season. So, you know, this show I find is some of the best conversation, some of the best content. Voss, I appreciate doing it with you every week. Tell folks where they can contact you online and what you're working on currently.
Yes, I am at Vasilis Fiamata on Twitter, X, VasilisFiamata. Fiamata is the name of the restaurant that we opened in March in Finksburg, Maryland, Italian restaurant and lounge, and great place to have your holiday celebrations.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening as always. If you want to do something nice for the show, write a 5-star 50-word review. That's always highly valued, and tell that one new person who doesn't know about it, and they'll hopefully get their indoctrination. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.